Thank you for inviting me to this amazing place. And I appreciate it's afternoon and no one particularly wants to go to another talk. So, and I'm also sick of the sound of my own voice from giving the same talk for a year. So I'm just going to talk about something very general and easy. It sort of serve perhaps as an introduction to Fakhaya's talks next week if he talks about flow homology, which he usually does. So I'll just give a bit of an introduction to flow homology. I might give one result and explain how that goes. But mainly, I just want to just sort of define flow homology because very few people seem to know what it is, even though it's very physicsy and very string theory-y and very relevant and very useful. And also because it'll relate to, I just decided to talk on this hearing Diokonescu's talk, where he's talking about these brains and these HOMs between them giving you new states. So this is sort of the mirror of that. This is the A model talk, although I won't write backwards what he's wrote or anything like that. So. Okay, so as I say, since I'm not really trying to put across any results, I've got no agenda or anything. I'll just talk very slowly and do stop me. And I'm going to start very simply. So I just want to explain some basic Morse theory. So this will be particularly boring for a lot of the audience. But anyway, so suppose to start with, I'm on a compact finite dimensional manifold. Eventually, this will, as is traditional, become infinite dimensional. So I want a function f. Which is non-degenerate, has non-degenerate critical points. Then I can compute the homology from this function. So using the Witten complex or the Milner-Smale complex, depending on your affiliation. This is so I can form a complex in the following way. I'll explain this geometrically in a second. So a sum over pi, which are the critical points of f. And I stick a copy of a field there, so let's say R for the purposes of this talk, for each I. And this is a big vector space, and I put it in degree index. Wait a minute. So I want a grading on this vector space. I want to put this in degree, so grading degree, the index of f at pi. So f is a non-degenerate critical point. So around pi, in some coordinates, f looks like something like some xi squared, where i runs from 1 up to some n minus p minus some xi squared n minus p plus 1 to n. So it has a bunch of positive, it's Hessian, has a bunch of positive eigenvalues, a bunch of negative eigenvalues, and its index is this p, the number of negative eigenvalues. No. God. I hope not. What have I done wrong? No, p can only. Yeah, p can only go from 0 to n, if I've done this correctly. I may have got a plus 1 in there somewhere, or a 2 pi i or something. Okay. So there's a boundary operator d from the degree I parts to the degree I minus 1 parts. As I say, I'll draw this in a second. And it counts, it just counts gradient flow lines of f. So I pick a metric on my manifold, it doesn't really matter. Flow lines of f from degree I critical points to degree I minus 1 critical points. Okay, so the way you do Morse theory is you always draw a torus. So here's the torus. It doesn't usually look like this, but for the purposes of this talk, that's the torus. Okay, so it's got a big bump on it. And I use the height function on the board. And that has non-degenerate critical points. So there's one here of degree 2. This is degree 1. This is degree 2. This is degree 1. This is degree 1. I should draw this slightly differently. Degree 1. Degree 1, and there's a minimum down here of degree 0. Okay, And so the Morse complex, what you're supposed to do is, to every critical point, I'm supposed to be associating a cycle, because this is supposed to be the homology complex of the manifold. And the cycle I associate is just all of the points that come out of downward gradient flow lines out of here. So if I just go in any direction after this critical point and draw all possible flow lines, that gives me a cell. And the cell it gives me is this 2-cell, which is the dimension of this degree. Okay. So similarly, all the flow lines coming out of here give me a 1-cell. And there's one round the back. So this critical point here corresponds to this one cycle in homology. This critical point here corresponds to this one cycle in homology. But the reason I've drawn it in this funny way is to see the boundary operator. These don't have any boundary, because the boundary of this one is this minus itself. So that's not of interest. But this one's more interesting. So the cell coming out of this critical point is this here. So I made a bit of a mess of my drawing now. Anyway, all of these points can be reached by gradient flow lines coming from this point here. And so the boundary of this cell, which corresponds to this point, is actually the cell corresponding to this critical point here. So the reason for that is there's one gradient flow line from here to here. That's a gradient flow line. And that means that the boundary of this cell should be the boundary coming from this critical point. Should be this cell here. So the boundary of this cell is this cell. So all the critical points correspond to cells, and the boundary operator just corresponds to the usual boundary operator of taking boundaries on their cells. Similarly, the boundary of this one is the same, and so the boundary of the sum of them is zero. Okay. So in this case, you get something like, you get R plus R in degree 2, you get R plus R plus R in degree 3, in degree 1, sorry, and R in degree 0. And the boundary of this one is this one. There's one flow line here. Boundary of this one is also this one. It's minus 1. Boundary of this is minus this one. And then these two are boundaryless, and this is boundaryless. So that's the complex you get. And so the homology you get is something like, there's an R in this degree, given by one here and one here, or A here and A here. They're boundaryless because they go to A minus A is 0. And then an R plus R in this dimension and an R in this dimension. This is H2, H1 and H0. Is that obvious? So in an infinite dimensional case, so the point is you can just do topology in terms of this differential equation, just this gradient flow line. So you can now do this in an infinite dimensional case. So Fleur in the 1980s did this for instanton Fleur homology related to Donaldson theory, but for its less known cousin, which is the Fleur homology I want to talk about, which is, so an infinite dimensional version leads to Fleur homology. Sort of 1985 or something. Fleur homology for Lagrangian intersections. And so the setup here is, take a symplectic manifold. This is not what I'm going to do Morse theory on. It's going to be on some auxiliary manifolds. And I say that L in X, so this is some even dimensional manifold, something of half dimension in there is Lagrangian, if and only if the symplectic form restricted to it is identically zero. So some kind of real slice if this is a Kähler manifold. So the local model is like Rn inside Cn. Okay, and then there's... what you can consider on here is if you have two Lagrangians, L1 and L2, you can consider curves with boundary, one boundary in L1 and one boundary in L2, so open strings. And so I consider on the space, what did I call this space? X, that's a shame. So I can consider some space M is the space of curves in x, so intervals, one boundary on L1 and one boundary on L2, and I'm going to do Morse theory on this space. So this is some infinite dimensional space, and there's a function, a Morse function, well it's not really Morse, but we can pretend it's Morse, on this space, which is the symplectic action functional. Symplectic action functional, or the symplectic area, which is given by, so if I call this curve C, I just integrate over that disk D. So I just fix some base point or some base curve even. So in it, well, you get the idea. It's so f of this curve C is the integral from P up to C omega. So it's just the symplectic area of any disk which spans this curve here. Okay, so I'm going to speak very informally. Lots of this can be rigorized under certain conditions. And then the gradient flow lines of this. So I have to move along grad of f in this space. So I have to move in a direction which increases this area as quickly as possible. Because you can imagine that just means if I have an almost, I should say, of course I haven't got a metric, so grad doesn't make any sense. So what I want to do is introduce a metric, which therefore gives me an almost complex structure here. Okay. So you can imagine the gradient here is, if you're moving, if the curve moves in this direction, then you just do j times this direction and flow the curve in that direction. That gives you a normal vector field along here. And so what it gives you is gradient flow lines of pseudo-holomorphic disks. On my manifold X. On the space in a natural way. Yeah. Okay. Sorry? It's probably easier to define the symplectic structure and the complex structure. Or is it? You have a metric on this space. So that gives you a metric on this curve. Just an L2 metric on this curve. And I'm just dealing with normal vector fields, so I just take their L2 norm. Everything's got a metric. And then I integrate that over the curve. Sorry?
Normal is
small. Yeah. And that's what works out to give this, if you calculate this. Okay, so the gradient flow line just sweeps out holomorphic curves from this manifold. Okay. So, and the critical points of f are the constant curves. Sorry? No, yeah, it's pseudo-holomorphic. Sorry, that's an abbreviation for pseudo-holomorphic. Yeah. Okay. So critical points are constant curves. You can pretend your manifold's scalar. Are constant, but I'm going back to real curves now, constant curves C, okay? I.e. intersection points of my Lagrangians. We'll see later why we can assume the Lagrangians are in general position and intersect nicely. So you can't really make sense of the index of these critical points. They're all infinite. So there's an infinite. You're computing something called semi-infinite cohomology here. If you look at the flow lines coming out of a critical point, it's the space of these curves describing holomorphic disks coming out of one of those intersection points P. Then it's infinite dimensional. But we can talk about relative indexes between two different critical points. So. Thank you. indices. Okay. So if I fix the index of P1, so by P1 I mean I take an intersection point of the Lagrangian and I take the constant curve C, which is just concentrated at P1, to be 0, say. So really you should set this to be infinity over 2 or something, and then set everything else relative to that. So we'll call it 0. And then we define index of P2 in the following way, which may not be well defined at this stage, so we'll come to that. So remember, I'm interested in certain gradient flow lines, so I'm interested in disks between here and here. So I'm going to fix a homology class of a disk running from P1 to P2 with boundary in L1 and L2. So given a homology class, well, let's just keep it simple. Given a disk, whose boundary is in L1 and L2 and runs from P1 to P2. So I won't describe that. Given a disk D, then I can define an index in the following way. Okay, so this is all in some space X, right? So Tx restricted to this disk is trivial because D is contractible. And then T on the boundary of, so this gives me a trivialization of its top exterior power, i.e. the canonical bundle of X, restricted to the boundary of D. That's all I really need. But it gives me a unique one. I always know this could be trivialized on the boundary of D, but I want to trivialize it in a very particular way. Okay. And then TL1, I can form its top exterior power. So this is lambda n Tx, where Tx is a complex vector space at each point, complex vector bundle. So I take its nth exterior power as a complex vector bundle. This I'm taking as a real vector bundle. L1 is something of dimension n again, but as a real vector space. This sits inside. Okay, in a natural way. This gives me a section to homotopy of this, and I take its winding number. I haven't really explained that very well, have I? In the Calabi-Yau case, where this is trivial, it'll be a lot easier to describe. Let me see, I've got a metric. So alternatively, I have a metric on everything here. So in particular, I have a volume form on L1 and a volume form on L2 if I pick orientations. So this volume form, which is an N form on here, gives me a section of this canonical bundle. So volume form winds as a section of this trivial line bundle, and I take its winding number. Okay, and this is something called the Maslow class. That winding number equals something called the Maslow class. This will get simpler in the Calabi-Yau class. Of this homology class. We'll come to Maslow classes of Lagrangians in a minute. This is slightly different. This is the Maslow class of this intersection point relative to this one. It's related to Maslow classes of Lagrangians, which we'll see in a minute. Well, this is just a trivial vector bundle, a complex line bundle, and this is a nowhere vanishing section. So this is a map to this. Yep. And this also lies on the boundary of the disk. So it just gives me a section of this trivial line bundle. So in other words, it gives me a nowhere vanishing complex number. So I just take its winding. It's a map to C. Well, if you just C star, but if you just normalize it, it's a map to S1.
I understand how you had to take that. That's just a phase of going from P1 to
P2. Right.
But then you jump onto L2 and then you come back to P1 or what?
What have I done wrong?
So you're just moving the lambda 1 and then the filter.
Oh, you've got me worried now. Let me get to the Calabi outcuts, which is all I really care about, and then it's simpler. Okay, good point. I think there's a canonical way for you to go from this one to this one, because you can go through here. Anyway, there's a way of doing this. Okay, and this is to within plus or minus one or something. This is the dimension, so maybe this is the easiest way to define it. This is the virtual dimension of the moduli space of pseudo-holomorphic disks in this homology class, running from P1 to P2. Yeah, you may have to add 1 or divide by 2 or something. So in other words, it doesn't really matter how you describe it in this particular way. What you want to know is the dimension of the space of flow lines from one critical point to another. So what I want to do is set this, look at cases where this is equal to 1. Which angle? Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not sure that makes sense. We're in higher dimensions here. The picture's a bit...
Yeah.
Okay. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. There you go. Thank you. We can now... So, using... This is the hard part, doing an enormous amount of analysis in certain conditions, like on Fano manifolds. We can now count such pseudo-holomorphic disks after perturbing everything suitably and so on, doing lots of analysis, count pseudo-holomorphic disks in moduli spaces of dimension 0 to get a boundary operator between critical points whose index differs by 1, whose indices well, it depends what you mean by dimension. With these flow lines, you can always rescale a flow line, so I want to divide out by that so I can count them. If you want to consider it to be dimension 1, then you then have to divide them. There's a plus or minus 1. I don't want to get sort of caught up too much in how I define these. If you have, even on a compact manifold, if you define, just do the Morse theory, what is the space of flow lines from between two critical points of index which differ by 1, it's really one-dimensional, because for any flow line you can rescale it and get it to run at different times. Right? But I want to divide out by that rescaling. Yeah, that will also do. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going into how I'm setting this up. I'm parameterizing the disk to be actually a cylinder. An interval times R. I'm looking at maps of the interval times R, and then I'm rescaling R. But equivalently, you can differ by reparameterizations of the holomorphic disk. Okay. So this gives you a complex. I'll explain the problems in a minute. But this gives you a complex whose in some sense computing the homology of the space of lines of, I don't know, of open strings or whatever you want to call it. So there's two problems. So this can be done. So two problems. One is the analysis. So this can be overcome by people like Fleur, Fakaya, O, and so on, in the case of something called monotone manifolds, Farnaes. Okay. But in the case of Calabi-Yau manifolds, which is really what I'm interested in here, so for Calabi-Yau manifolds, this can be defined, this Fleur homology can be defined, well-defined, if and only if a certain obstruction vanishes in H2 of the Lagrangians. Vanishes. Okay, and in physics terms, this can be encoded, so this is work of Fakaya, Ono, and Ota, and this can be encoded in a single function, and it's the same as the one which appears in physics. So, in other words, it's if and only if the superpotential is critical. So the derivative of the superpotential vanishes at this Lagrangian, if that makes any sense to you. It doesn't make any sense to me, but... Anyway, so this is why I don't want to get into a technical talk about Fleur homology. One, I know nothing about it, as has become clear, and... So this can be defined in these cases, and it can be defined on Calabi-Yau manifolds, if and only if a certain obstruction vanishes for the Lagrangian. But the grading is a problem, so that's problem two, if that's what you're worried about. No, there is. This is point two. So the second problem is the grading. So I define this grading, but there's a problem because I picked a homotopy class of disk. And if I picked a different homotopy class of disk, I may find that the moduli space changes. Okay, so the absolute grading from here to here, the number of flow lines from P1 to P2, differs depending on the homology class you go through. So, different homology classes. Of disk give different gradings. Different indices. Okay, so looking at the difference between all possible indices you get out by doing this construction in different homology classes gives you some lowest number, some lowest difference between the two, and that gives you a grade. So that means that the Fleur homology is something like Z mod n graded instead of Z graded. No, not for Claudia. Sorry?
What is n?
So n is this, let me think. If you pick a homology class and you get a relative index from here to here, now if you go over all different homology classes, you can get different numbers between here and here. So now you take the difference between those and you take the minimum, and that would be n. Yeah, there's ways of bounding it. Often you find it's even, so you can certainly define it mod 2 and so on. I'm no real expert on this. Is it? For what? What theory? How do you mean? Okay. Okay, I don't know what that is. H2 of the Lagrangian. Sorry? Yeah. So, sorry? No. Now, the problem is in the Calabi-Yau case, the moduli space of these holomorphic disks, its boundary can be codimension 1. So the theory doesn't really make much sense. You want to, it's not going to be deformation invariant. You can't do homology theory on something with a boundary. So there's very delicate analysis by Fukairo and so on as to when you can define this class. Well, so if you can compute, so there's a certain computation to do with boundary. You know, you have to compute holomorphic disks with boundary on that Lagrangian, compute some function from it, and see if its derivative is zero. Yeah. So no, basically. But in certain open cases, you might be able to do it. No. No, this is that a certain. I don't know the physics. I'm just using words, right? But it's that. So you compute this superpotential for all these Lagrangians, and then you want that its gradient vanishes, right?
When the superpotential is critical, then the topological condition is not satisfied.
Which topological condition?
Oh, actually, so the presence of existence.
No, I want to move the Lagrangian until this superpotential becomes critical. Otherwise, I can't do it. You have to pick a Lagrangian for which small deformations of the Lagrangian give you no. The superpotential doesn't vary for small deformations of the Lagrangian. It can be, yeah. Oh, I see what you mean. Sorry. Yeah, maybe it isn't real. No, I see what you mean. Sorry, is that what you're referring to? The obstruction lies in... Yeah, I beg your pardon. It lies in real. Okay. Okay, so... In the Calabi-Yau case, this problem doesn't happen picking different homology classes, because this I only use the homology class to trivialize the. We used this homology class, homotopy class, relative homotopy class of the disk, to trivialize the canonical bundle of X. Okay, but in the Calabi-Yau case, this is canonically trivial. But in the Calabi-Yau case, canonically trivialized by the Calabi-Yau form, so this holomorphic section of the canonical bundle. Okay. And so for Lagrangians of Maslov class 0, which I'll explain in a second, this grading problem vanishes. So HF is Z graded. So what this condition is here, so this is a topological condition, but it's easiest written in terms of the complex structure. So I take this holomorphic N form, and I restrict it to the Lagrangian. This is non-degenerate on the Lagrangian. In fact, in the Ricci flat metric, it gives you the volume form on the Lagrangian, the Riemannian volume form on the Lagrangian. But anyway, it gives you some non-zero form times by a phase. Okay. Now, this phase can. This is a circle-valued number which can vary over the Lagrangian. So the Maslov class is the winding number. This is Maslov class of a Lagrangian now. But the Maslov class is the winding number of this phase over this Lagrangian. So d theta is a class in H upper 1 of the Lagrangian with, I guess, 2 pi z coefficients. And this is called the Maslov class, and I want this to be 0. So if this is 0, then we have no problem with any of these constructions. You can define an integer graded thing. So in particular, if this is a two torus or something, if I identify the edges, if I take this Lagrangian in it, then this has a mass of class 2. So if you look at the winding of this function as you go around here, it's 2 or 1, depending on how you sort out your conventions. So we can't consider such a thing. Okay, so I want to consider Lagrangians whose mass of class is 0, in other words, whose phase function here lifts to a real valued, not a multivalued function. So a graded Lagrangian. This is a concept of Kontsevich and Paul Seidel. Okay, is a choice. It's a choice of a lift. So it's a choice of a Lagrangian L plus a function on it. Okay, where theta goes from L to R and e to the I theta times the volume form on the Lagrangian equals omega restricted. Lagrangians in a vector space.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be the same thing in that. Okay. So yeah, the thing you need to make sense of that more globally is a trivialization of the canonical model. Okay, so in this case, in this particular case, I can define this index better. So if I take L1 and L2 and a point of their intersection, then I can write in a local Garbo chart, I can write, so at the level of tangent spaces at P, in TPX, okay, choose Darbu coordinates such that L1 is the x-axis. So this is xi, yi, such that the symplectic form is dxi wedge dyi. And I can also assume that the holomorphic n form, by doing a skew transformation, is just dz1 up to dzn. Where z1 is x1 plus iy1, and so on. Okay, so L1 is just the x-axis, and L2, or its tangent space, is at an angle okay, so I've got L1 is here, L2 is here, I've got some angle theta I between them. Okay, and now I can define this index. So these are graded Lagrangians, so L1 theta 1, L2 theta 2. Then this theta is roughly just the sum of these angles. So it's just some kind of average angle. So theta 2 minus theta 1 is the sum of these. This is a bad choice, isn't it? Let's call this alpha I. The sum of alpha i's, but mod pi. So some natural number, okay, and then this, so definition, this is the index at P of the intersection point. Okay, is that clear? So this phase function is just the sum of these individual angles. Okay, but you can always add pi onto the phase function, or 2 pi or something. Right. Once you pick these gradings. Yeah. So the problem is here you can't define a grading, and The moduli space of a holomorphic disk will change. If you've got non-zero Maslov class, it will change depending on the homology class you use. Okay, so now we're getting on to things I actually know something about, fortunately. Sort of, yeah. We'll get around that in a second. Okay, so let me. So this may look a bit complicated and infinite dimensional, but in a sort of a local model, it just reduces to Morse theory. So the local model of any symplectic manifold around a Lagrangian L1 locally looks like the cotangent bundle of that symplectic manifold with a canonical symplectic structure. But suppose I actually work globally in the cotangent bundle, and then I take some other Lagrangian. This is going to be the graph of a closed one form, but let's suppose it's the graph in actual fact of an exact one form. Okay, so that makes this Lagrangian inside this cotangent bundle. Right, so I have this position here where L1, T star L1, some L2 here. And where does L2 crosses the axis at the critical points of F? So the intersection points of the two Lagrangians become the critical points of F. So this is like the Morse complex again. And the index of the critical points becomes the Morse index of F for an appropriate choice of grading on L1 and L2. Okay, so if it's a minimum, then the index is 0 and so on. And at least in the limit of these, I can scale this graph by making it smaller, and in the limit you and everything's invariant under that scaling. And in the limit you find that the holomorphic disks, so modulo some analysis, so roughly look like gradient flow of F. So what I mean by that is, if I take the gradient flow of a function on here, that also gives me gradient flow on here, because these two are canonically identified under the projection. Instead of plotting the gradient flow, I plot the corresponding lines. And that gives me a holomorphic disk. Right. Okay. So the Fleur complex reduces the Durham complex. So it's a result, I think, of O. It might be for Cairo now, that the Fleur homology. It's just the usual homology of L. So I've been doing everything, I think, with real coefficients. Okay, and more globally, so if I'm not working in a cotangent bundle, I'm working in some symplectic manifold with more topology away at infinity, then this is the first order approximation, but then there's going to be holomorphic disks which wrap infinity, and so there exists a spectral sequence with some grading depending on Maslov classes and dimensions of disks and so on, but going from the homology of L to the Fleur homology. This doesn't look very symmetric at the moment, but I'll explain why in a second. Okay, so really it's to first order, this is just Morse theory. Yeah. No, that's not true. So there's a spectral sequence is what's true. So that'll become clear in a second. So the point is, this graph here is something called a Hamiltonian deformation of this L1. Okay. So the statement is that Fleur homology, this is a global statement,
is independent of Hamiltonian deformations of the Li. So what this means, let me do it by drawing a picture. Suppose I'm in the one-dimensional case. So I have a curve, let's say, on a torus. Then a Hamiltonian deformation is one which is on average zero. So it's that the area is L1 primed. So the integral from L1 up to L1 primed of omega equals zero, then this is a Hamiltonian deformation. Okay? So it somehow preserves the center of mass of the Lagrangian or something. But it's that the signed area between the two is zero. If that's true, then it's a Hamiltonian deformation. And what that's equivalent to in this cotangent bundle picture . So in the cotangent case, this is equivalent to this one form, the closed one form, of which L is the graph, is exact. So the case that I drew was an exact one form, and so this was a Hamiltonian deformation of L. So this was the Fleur homology of L1 and L2, where they were actually Hamiltonian deformation equivalent. So in actual fact, this is the Fleur homology of L with itself. So that's why it is actually symmetric. This doesn't look very symmetric up here. So you're supposed to start with a Lagrangian, do a Hamiltonian deformation to make them intersect transversely, and then you can do everything I just said. And it turns out to be independent of that Hamiltonian deformation. Yeah. Yeah. Because it's Hamiltonian deformation of both of these, so it doesn't actually make any difference. Up to Hamiltonian deformation, L1 and L2 are equal.
Oh, you're assuming that from the spectral sequence?
Yeah. Sorry, this was a spectral... Right. So more globally, there's a spectral sequence. Yeah. This is the spectral sequence. There's a bigrading on this, such that the spectral sequence converges to this. Sorry, I didn't explain that very well. Any condition. Well, so long as the Fleur homology is well-defined. So there's lists of analytical problems with this. Equal. Well, in the cotangent bundle case, but other than that, I don't know any. I mean, you're asking for the spectral sequence to degenerate. And, I mean, if there's no other holomorphic disks involved, then, you know, if you prove there's no other holomorphic disks, which there clearly aren't in that case, then it's fine. Okay, so more generally, I should say that this holds true for any loop. So the definition of a Hamiltonian deformation of two Lagrangians, I'll do it by picture, is I take a loop on one Lagrangian, I deform it to a loop on the other Lagrangian. And I ask that the integral, the area between the two, is zero for all loops in L1. So if this is true for all loops in your Lagrangian, then you say it's a Hamiltonian deformation. And the Fleur homology is independent of it. Okay, so in particular, if you're interested as a physicist in special Lagrangians, you can still compute the Fleur homology even if they intersect badly by taking a Hamiltonian deformation and passing to a Lagrangian. So you can always find a function which does this for you. Right, well, that should be just the first approximation. That's missing all the disk instantons or whatever. Yeah, yeah. But this is the case I want to... This is why I got a bit confused. This is the case I want to deal with. Okay. So, yeah, as I said, there's lots of analytical difficulties with this, which I don't want to discuss because it's not really my field of expertise. But Fakir will probably tell us about those next week. Okay, so what time do I start? 4. Okay, what do I want to explain?
So I want to explain two things that this governs and what the use of it is. Might be in physics. So one thing it governs is, let me go back to, so in mirror symmetry, under mirror symmetry, these things should roughly correspond somehow to bundles. So if in mirror symmetry you're dealing with two two stable bundles, in particular two Hermitian Yang Mills, well, it's satisfying some PDE like the MMMS equations or something. I take two vector bundles, my quad Yang. Okay. So physicists tend to be interested in them when they satisfy this PDE. Okay, but as the Hermitian Yang Mills equation is in 1-1 correspondence with, well, stable vector bundles, holomorphic vector bundles. So mathematicians tend to think about just holomorphic vector bundles. Okay, and one reason this is a more flexible notion is if I want to form some extension of the two. So if I have a class in, so if I have an extension class between two of these bundles, okay, then I can form an extension. So this is just a one form with values in HOM E2, E1. Then I can form an extension in the following way and study this as a holomorphic bundle. Now, you might, physicists be more interested in the connection on it. So in terms of connections, what this amounts to is I have a connection on E1, I have a connection on E2, and I form the direct sum topologically of the bundles, but I don't form the direct sum connection. I stick an E here, where E is in is this one form. Okay. Now, even though this E may be stable, this connection here will no longer be Hermitian-Yang-Mills. Okay, but we have a theorem of Donaldson and Uhlenbeck and Yao and so on, which is that if E is stable, then there exists a gauge transformation taking this connection to a Hermitian-Yang-Mills connection. Okay, but the natural connection which you get on this bundle is not Hermitian-Yang-Mills. Okay, now the same thing is true on the other side. So even if you're only interested in special Lagrangians, a reason to be interested in Lagrangians is that you can do the same thing. So if you have L1 and L2, and you have the intersection point, let's just take one point for now, is of degree, Fleur degree 1, so I get an element of HF1 from this. So this is supposed to be mirror to this X1. Even if these are special Lagrangians, then there's a natural Lagrangian I can form, which you might then hope to deform to a special Lagrangian. So there exists something called the Lagrangian connect sum. Everything's graded here, so I can define this degree. Okay, which is, here's L1, here's L2. I glue in a local model. So topologically, it's just the usual connect sum, but is I glue in a local model which is actually Lagrangian in the Darboux charts. There's a very canonical construction of this. Okay, and this is this thing L1 connects some L2, which is governed by this element of HF1 given by the intersection points. So as you scale the element of HF1 bigger here, you scale the neck here. If you want to complexify everything, you have to put flat line bundles on these two things. Take a complex element here and use that extra complex direction to glue the flat line bundles in different ways. Okay, and then we would like to deform to a special Lagrangian. Similarly, you can form any other of those combinations that Diokonescu was talking about with X2s and X3s giving you more elements of the drive category. All you do is you shift the phase on these Lagrangians so that their intersection points become degree 1 and then do this operation. And the degree 1 condition, I should have said, which is I've picked gradings on these things such that the intersection point is of degree 1, that means that this is naturally graded as well. So if the gradings are on these are such that the intersection point has degree 1, then there's a natural grading I can put on here which extends to give the standard gradings at infinity that I already had.
and extends continuously over here. So that's if and only if this intersection point is of degree 1. So that's analogous to this x1 class over here. Okay. But now if you're interested in special Lagrangians, so you might want this to look like a special Lagrangian, then what you'd like is to understand the following. So I go back to the Hermitian-Yang-Mills picture. There's something called a moment map, which tells you that you have, so this is a tier bot, Donaldson, which tells you you have the following picture. So if this is the space of connections on a fixed bundle, some infinite dimensional space, this has a natural symplectic structure, and it has these huge gauge group orbits acting on it. So it's sort of stratified like this. These are gauge group orbits. And what this theorem I was mentioning before, this Donaldson-Uhlenbeck-Yau theorem says, is that if this orbit is stable, if and only if it's stable, then it meets uniquely a certain slice to the orbit, which is the Hermitian-Yang-Mills connections. And these are the zeros of the moment map. So I haven't really explained what any of this means, but there is such a formal picture, and again, with lots of analysis, you can prove this. So in the same way, what I'm claiming is that the same picture is true on the Lagrangian side. So if I look at some kind of space of Lagrangians, maybe with flat connections over them to complexify everything, then I have these huge orbits of Hamiltonian deformations. So this is a Hamiltonian deformation orbit of a fixed Lagrangian. And on this space, at least once I complexify and add flat connections and so on, there's a natural symplectic structure and Kähler structure and a moment map for this group action and a natural slice to the group action given by the zeros of the moment map of the special Lagrangians. So modulo issues of stability of this orbit, which I haven't got time to tell you about, but there should be a definition of stability for Lagrangians, then you should be able to find a unique special Lagrangian in the Hamiltonian deformation space. Deformation orbit of a fixed Lagrangian. Okay, so the one thing I did just want to end up with is the following. So theorem. If the flow homology of L is defined, there exists at most one special Lagrangian in its Hamiltonian deformation orbit. So this formal picture motivates this theorem, and then you can prove this completely separately by Flirt homology. So it's a two-line proof. So the idea is that considering Lagrangians up to Hamiltonian deformation, should be the same as considering special Lagrangians modulo this stability issue, which I haven't had time to tell you about. So that's what I haven't had time to. That's another lecture. But this gives you a way of dealing with special Lagrangians. Again, you can't explicitly solve these equations, like you can't explicitly solve the Hermitian-Yang-Mills equations on a compact Clairbiot. But you can deal with Lagrangians up to Hamiltonian deformation. That's a lot easier to deal with. Okay. So the easy part of this theorem is uniqueness. So that's what I'm trying to prove here, that this slice only hits this thing once. Okay, so the uniqueness is the following. So suppose I only want to deal with smooth things here. So suppose these are smooth special Lagrangians, which are Hamiltonian deformation equivalent. Okay, then I have this flirt. The spectral sequence, which I was talking about, and the one thing I forgot to tell you is that the theorem of Fukaya-O and Ota is that H0 survives this spectral sequence. So this exists on both sides. So the reason for that is this H0 is the unit in the cut product on this flow homology. I certainly don't want to explain that. But so that bit survives, and that tells you that these Lagrangians must actually intersect. So if these two special Lagrangians didn't intersect at all, they clearly wouldn't have any flow homology. So there exists an intersection point of L1 and L2, because I have this piece here in the flow homology. Okay. If it's transverse, and it's going to be degree zero, because that's what I want, is a degree zero intersection point. Okay. Then locally, about this intersection point, L2 is the graph of DF inside the cotangent bundle of L1, and F has a minimum. So this is just the condition that this intersection point is of degree zero. Okay, but this is actually impossible because the special Lagrangian condition implies that actually F is harmonic. So this one form, the fact that this one form is closed is the condition that this graph is Lagrangian. The condition that it's special Lagrangian is that it's also co-closed with respect to a certain metric, but we don't want to worry about that. Okay, so this is the Laplacian of F equals zero, locally around this intersection point. So by the maximum principle, F does not have a minimum. Okay, just in the last 30 seconds, I'll just say more globally what you do. So in particular, the intersection point can't be nice and transverse. So this is the idea of the proof. Okay, the actual proof is that, more generally, L1 intersect L2 could be some hideous mess. But if I take a small connected component of L1 intersect L2, of a neighborhood inside L1, then in this neighborhood, X looks like T star L1, L2 looks like the graph of DF again. This is because I'm remaining close to this zero section where they intersect. And again, D star DF equals zero. So what this says is that F has its minima on the boundary of this neighborhood. So this is the maximum principle again for this elliptic operator, for this Laplacian. Okay, and so by some Morse theory and Handel cancellation, you can perturb F. Such that it has no local, has no, to preserve this property, it has no interior minima. But it is Morse. So it's sort of standard argument in topology. So its minima happens on the boundary, and you can preserve that property while making F Morse. Well, all that does is that gives you a Hamiltonian deformation of L2 cancelling. Okay, such that all intersection points with L1, there's no minima, so they have degree non-zero. Okay, so there can be no zero flow homology. But we said there was some zero flow homology. So this isn't actually possible. You can't take a neighborhood of this intersection, because actually the intersection is the whole thing. So in actual fact, L1 equals L. Okay, sorry, I ran over a bit. Well, a conjecture there is. Right? There's no theorem. So the nice theorem to prove would be that the stability condition, which is in a paper on the web, is equivalent to the Hamiltonian deformation class containing a unique special Lagrangian. So this gives you uniqueness, but its existence... Well, this whole picture motivates how you should find that thing as well. So you're supposed to take the gradient flow, the norm square, of the moment map. So this is what you do in the vector bundle case. Well, that turns out to be mean curvature flow. So again, in a paper with Yao, prove that in certain cases this mean curvature flow converges to these special Lagrangians, but they're very special cases. There's no hope of proving this in general at the moment.
You explained that there is this anomaly in defining the gradient for these finite cases.
Yeah.
And it seems that involves the canonical bundle on various.
Right, it's the first Chern class.
You can make with by gluing together different bits.
Right.
So could it be that you could have a non-collabial case where you still have a grading because no such homework with this?
Right, because the canonical bundle restricted to any holomorphic disk had C1 equals 0. Yeah, I guess that would work. But you wouldn't know that that was deformation invariant, because if you deformed, suddenly these things might occur. So you have to be a bit careful.
So these are complex gauge.
Yeah, because I didn't describe what the real group does.
Right.
So there's a unitary gauge transformation here, and here this U1 gauge transformation is on the line bundle on the group.
Oh, that was my question. What's the analog of the unit?
Right.
It's
U1. Yeah. Oh, he's here. He really had it in for me. I didn't get anywhere. I wanted to do it. I mean, I didn't want to say much more. I just wanted to say it more slowly.
Oh, that is most of your ideas.
Yeah, I guess. Every time I was about to explain something.
Right. And then you said, okay, there's a problem with the gradient.
Why is there no problem with the gradient? He just seems so pissed off all the time. He always looks so miserable. Really? Oh, so he's defined all these things?
No.
Okay, good. I didn't want to repeat it.
No, not at all.
That would have been embarrassing.
Although he did give this example.
That's why I put it in.
So now you explained what it is.